North American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Waylon Payne.
Adam was able to talk to Waylon over Zoom video. Waylon was born into a musical family. His mother was country singer Sammy Smith and his dad, Jody Payne, the guitar player in Willie Nelson's band, The Family. Waylon told us how he got into music, his struggle with addiction, and the road to releasing his first new record since 2003, Blue Eye, The Harlot, The Queer, The Pusher, and Me.
You can watch the video from the interview on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Waylon Payne.
Thank you so much, Waylon, for doing this. I appreciate it.
Hey, not a problem, dude. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. So our podcast is about your journey in music and how you got to where you are now.
Sure.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about where you grew up? I know you have a musical family. We'll get into that as well.
I do. I was born in Nashville, Tennessee, but I was raised from 2 months on, starting off in South Texas, in a little town called Vider, which is about 9 miles from Beaumont.
Okay.
I lived down there, pretty much until about the fourth grade. And from the fourth and the fifth grade, I lived in Oklahoma with my mama.
Mm-hmm.
Around Newcastle. Then moved back to Texas, to Frisco, Texas, which is a little bit north of Dallas. Stayed there until I graduated high school, and then went off and started making my way in the world.
Right. That's cool. And okay, so tell me, you're born into a musical family. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, my father is the late Jody Payne. He played a very steady lead guitar and sang a mean harmony with Willie Nelson for about 36 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother is the late country music chanteuse, Miss Sammy Smith.
Very good. That's so cool.
And yeah.
Do you remember going to their shows and
stuff? All the time. It was an interesting childhood. It was great. You know, I learned a lot from my parents. Everything I know about the music business, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And did you learn guitar from your dad?
No, I taught myself that. I learned, actually Shelby Lynn, showed me a couple of chords early on in my life. Around 24 or so, 23 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I started on this journey and I pretty much taught myself. I would learn chords from other folks. Daddy and I he didn't really teach me guitar too much.
Okay. Yeah. And you said 23, 24 when you started learning guitar?
Yeah.
Is that right? Oh my gosh. Was that the first instrument you learned to play?
Well, I played drums in a marching band.
And, oh, okay.
But that was like, you know, the guitar was something I picked up. I cut my finger almost off one day doing yard work. And so,
oh my gosh,
I had learned some chords. I knew E and I knew A and I knew B.
Okay.
And I would drive some folks out of the house with my damn E chord. That was all I knew, man. But boy, I did it. Bang, I had a powerful E. And most every song I ever wrote was in E because it just sounded better, you know?
Right.
But I was on my back for about 6 weeks and had my little guitar. And so, man, I had my whole hand wrapped up, this one here, except for my thumb. And this one over here was free, so I could make my chords, but I couldn't strum. I could do it with my thumb. So still to this day, I don't hold a pick. I don't use a pick. I use this dead finger. I put a fake nail on it, and it hardens up, so it'll give me a pick, you know?
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. But some nights, if I don't get the nail, you know, because the nail on there that's right there is really fragile and delicate. So if I don't get the fake nail put on top of it, then it'll split and it'll bleed on the people in the front row. So.
Oh, have you had that problem before?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, sorry, folks, move back. I've got a dead finger and it's squirting.
Wow. Well, what made you want to pick up the guitar in your 20s?
Well, I mean, I had always, you know, strived to be an entertainer, a mm-hmm. singer. I things came to me a little later in life, I guess. I don't know. You know what I mean? I most of my life was a singer, and mm-hmm. thought that was what you needed to do to get into it, you know. And then slowly over time, I realized, well, hey, wait a minute, there are people that write these songs, you know, and I have something I need to say, and mm-hmm. and or maybe, you know, that's how people get to say what they want to say. And so I just started writing my own feelings. You know, my heroes as songwriters were Chris Christopherson and Bobby Gentry and my mom and Willie Nelson, mm-hmm. you know. So that was what I learned, you know. Those were the songs I migrated to as a child and latched onto. And so that was how I decided to write. And I learned from my heroes, you know. Mm-hmm. And once I realized you had to write songs, well, then it was just kind of another step. You know, I fought the guitar for a long time. I'm not sure why, but you know, when I met Shelby Lynn, you know, she was so powerful, just sitting there singing songs with her guitar, and so was Willie, and you know, all these heroes I had. And once I decided to pick it up for myself, you know, once mm-hmm. I wanted to do it, that was it. I was hooked.
That's cool.
Yeah, so my daddy and I fought like cats and dogs, though, because he, you know, he was like, well, you're not a guitar player if you don't know how to play scales. And I was like, I don't have the mental dexterity and capacity to know what it's good enough that I can just find a chord and pick it. So don't press me. Don't press me, man.
Was your dad like classically trained guitar?
Oh yeah. Well, see, he started picking guitar when he was like a baby, like, right.
Oh, okay.
They were rough folks. They were tobacco. And so he was raised, and like he started playing with his sister Imogene on the radio when they were like 12, 13.
Wow.
He left home when he was 14 to go make music, because he could make more playing music than he could on the tobacco plantation that we had in the tobacco farm. And so,
whoa.
He left home and started playing music at a very young age. Mm-hmm. You know, and so he, you know, I'm sure he had his own way of how he learned it. We never really even talked about how he learned or what inspired him to play. But, you know, he would just poke me a little bit, you know, josh me some. You know, you're never going to be a guitar player if you don't know how to play a scale, son.
Right. Yeah, I was just curious, because there's people that are, you know, obviously classically trained and they're very good, or they'll go to Berklee School of Music or whatever. And then there's people that never had lessons and they achieve just as much success as some of the people that are, you know, really striving for it that way.
Well, you know, in my older age, I'm almost 50, and mm-hmm. like I think that I might like to try to get a teacher to teach me, you know, because I'm playing a lot of Bobby Gentry music in my house and in my life, and like her style or picking style is something pretty crazy, and so is Willie's, you know, the Django Reinhardt stuff. And, mm-hmm. I really would like to get my mind and my head wrapped around how to make my guitar playing better, you know, mm-hmm. Because I've just kind of done it on my own all this time, and I'm comfortable with it. I would just like to maybe challenge myself to do some more.
Yeah, I know.
This pandemic thing has made me want to be more of a Renaissance man. I feel I want to go. I want to go learn how to throw pottery, and I want to paint more, you know, and I want to, yeah, make
do more
pretty.
Yeah, do creative things. Sure.
Yes.
Sure. So I want to go back a bit. So after you pick up the guitar at 23, you start writing some music, and what was next for you? What led you to start performing? Like, do you remember your first performance?
Well, I mean, I had been performing like all the while, you know. I knew that I was going to try to get to Nashville somehow. My first regular gig was like 19 or 20 years old. I started working for Fiesta Texas down in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. It was an Opryland theme park, and so we did six days a week, three, four shows a day. And yeah, and so it was a country music review, so there were like 15, 20 of us in this show. So we did all of the country music. So it was a great way to get on stage in front of lots of people, and cut your teeth. And so from there, they sent me one weekend to go play the Grand Ole Opry. And so at the Opry, I met Johnny Russell, who introduced me on his segment that day. And a couple of weeks later, he had called me and convinced me. He was like, hey, you know, you're really good. I think you should come to Nashville. I want to introduce you to some people. So on John's suggestion, I packed the car when my show job ended and moved to Nashville. And I started singing in beer joints. My mom had told me early on, if you want to have a career in music, you need to find somewhere to sing six nights a week and do it. So I found the bars down on Broadway and I started singing seven nights a week and not just, you know, a song or two here. We would start at one end of Broadway and, you know, there was a live band in every bar down there. So we would work our ways, me and my group of friends, we would start at one end and sing four or five songs and then move to the next one, sing four or five. We did it all night long, you know.
Wow. And
we did that for years. Broadway back then was kind of rougher than it is now. Now it's a real tourist attraction, but back then it was like there were some porn stores and, like, you know, hardcore beer joints. Like Tootsie's was a hardcore beer joint.
Mm-hmm.
The turf was a, you know, and Mama Joe's, you know, it was just a different animal. Printer's Alley used to be one of the coolest joints in the world because there used to be like eight or nine bars in that alley. And like, it was just a different way of life. But we learned, you know, the cool thing about it would be, you know, they were like, oh, don't go down there to Broadway. Don't do that. That's not where all the losers hang out. Well, those losers that they were talking about was like the Texas Troubadours or the remaining members of the Texas Playboys. Or any, you know, the Mel Tillis band or the Opry band. They were the pickers that were the best of the best. And I got to cut my teeth with them because I was Sammy's kid or Jody's mm-hmm. kid, you know. And I got right in and they helped me hone my craft. It was only after I met Shelby that I started trusting myself to write my own music. And I toured with Shelby for a while and then I had a kind of a drinking problem. I had a little bit of a drug problem and I ended up getting fired in California. And once I got out there and I was on my own and nobody else was around, I just started turning inward and I started writing my own songs and I just kind of developed my own thing.
Wow. And that was in Los Angeles. Did you end up staying in Los Angeles for a while?
Yeah, no? I did. I got fired out there in like 1999 or 2000 and stayed out there and started writing songs and hanging out and fell into a group of friends. And wasn't too long after that Keith Gaddis, who I had ran into and met, you know, known from Nashville, we ran into each other on the street one day at a stoplight. Wow. And I was like, I saw Nashville Plates and or Texas Plates. I was like, hey, Texas Plates. And it was Gaddis. And long story short, we ended up making an album together and Gaddis changed my life by helping me make that first album.
Was that The Drifter?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Yeah, wow.
The Drifter. Those songs happened in that couple of years that I was living out there in California. You know, it was just my life and I just some stories, you know. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere as heavy as the new album. The new album's quite a bit more introspective and a little heavier.
Mm-hmm.
But the first album was a lot of fun. We had a good time making it.
And was that all recorded and written in LA?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Wow. Was that a pretty cool experience? I mean, I know you've been around music and studios, I'm sure, for a long time.
Well, it was cool for me, man. It was cool for me because I was kind of a country bumpkin, you know. I'd never really been anywhere. And when I got stuck out in California, it was like almost a blessing in disguise because nobody knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. And I didn't have to be bound to my past anymore. I could take, for the first time in my life, a chance to decide who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. I found out who I was, and I like him. And so I kept him around. And he, you know, it was just like, that was just the way it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to do some music and, you know, and make a cool record and start it out. I kind of got into some trouble because I had been partying for years and that eventually got the better of me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It will with anybody if you don't keep your eyes focused, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. It's super easy to get stuck in that or slip into that. I mean, especially in the music industry where a lot of it's, you know, glamorized and glorified and wow. Well, once you finished The Drifter, did you tour the record? Did you stay in LA?
No, I wasn't able to tour the record because I was pretty much under the weight of a pretty bad problem by then.
Okay.
I ended up getting dropped and kind of went into a 5 or 6 year cave of meth.
So 5 6 years after that, sorry.
it was just kind of one of those things. My mom died right after The Drifter came out, and
oh my gosh,
I was in a relationship that was kind of toxic, and all we did was a lot of meth, and I just got lost and burned a lot of bridges, and
Came
back to Nashville in 2006 and tried to make some things happen, and nothing would. Just got deeper into it and made my way to Texas in 2008 and met some people that changed my life and helped me get my stuff together. And this record came out of that. I just kind of
wanted
about the experience and the journey.
Wow. So 2008 is when you kind of, You got back. You were able to get back involved.
Well, I went back to Texas and started getting sober. You know,
it took
until 2012 for me to finally put it down, and it's been 8-9 years now.
Wow, congratulations!
It's okay. I found something better to believe in. You know what I mean? I found something more important.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I mean, I haven't drank for only 3 years, but same thing. I mean, it's easy to get stuck in that world. I mean, so. Yeah, like I said, it's glorified and it looks, you know,
and it's
cool
easy
and
to
fun.
Like, you know what I mean? It's easy to deal with or to think you're dealing with your problems by using it, because that's what everybody says to do.
Right.
And eventually, if you get enough of that, well, then it, you know, that leads you to other things and other things and other things. You know what I mean? And that's the magic pill that everybody wants to swallow. Hey, you don't have to feel, just take this. You won't feel anything. Eventually, you get through everything that's going to make you not feel, you still feel. And,
Totally. Yeah. And well, congratulations, man. 9 years. That's amazing.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah. That's so cool. So, and then the new record, you just released a new record this year, right?
Comes out today.
Oh, comes out today. Congratulations.
Comes out at midnight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes out at midnight.
Very cool. Tell me about this record. I mean, obviously it was quite a
man. It's just
a lot of years,
you know,
in the making, huh?
Yeah, I started it about 10 years ago, and really seriously, I met this guy named Edward. And he became my dearest friend, and Edward just never let me. He saw something in me that I didn't see in myself anymore, and he helped me stand up. And then he had a baby, and that baby knew who I was. And I felt like I needed to stand up and be a responsible gentleman for him, because I had never had anybody, you know what I mean? I didn't have too good of experience with family and fathers and sons. It kind of screwed me up very, very bad. Mm-hmm. And this was a kind of a reprogramming to remind me of the values that I held dear as a man. And I was given the opportunity to see a proper father and son relationship, which changed my life. So this story, once I got myself together, the songs kind of started coming. A lot of them deal with, you know, addiction. A lot of them deal with triumph. A lot of them deal with broken hearts. Mm-hmm. But it's my story. So I invite everybody to come along and take a listen, because I'm real proud of it. Maybe you'll learn something new or hear something you haven't heard before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was the first song you wrote from the record? Do you remember? Like, what kind of sparked the?
Well, the first song that actually got—I mean, well, it's it, but that's kind of a—I think "Sins of the Father" was the first was one of the first ones that came along. However, "Shiver" I wrote in 2004, and it was directly linked to the drug problem that the record talks about. So, and they just started coming.
Wow. And then, like, with this record, It comes out tomorrow or tonight at midnight, yeah. Which is super exciting. Are you, I know it's a weird time. did you think about not putting it out now because of the pandemic, or was that not even a thought in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of, when it started coming down, I was like, man, I wish we could put it out. And thankfully the label was just, we only had to push it back like a month.
Maybe, not bad. You know, yeah.
Or two. They were real diligent and they were real committed to this. And I'm so thankful that they were, because it seems to be doing its job, which I had hoped for. You know, I'd hoped that it would reach a lot of people, and hopefully it'll give you some stuff to think about. If it can soothe your heart, that's great. If it can make you dance a little bit, that's great. I don't know how much of it'll make you dance, because it's kind of a downer, but there's some on there that'll make you jump. Mm-hmm.
Have you been able to play any of these songs out, like live or anything, or is that not?
Oh yeah, we started touring it earlier this year and last year. It's been done for about a year and a half, and I went out on the road to the second part of last year with Robert Earl Keen, and then my band and I went out in February and March, and before everything shut down. So it's been nice to get a little preview. We're ready to get back to it. I'm excited, and I hope that the future holds the ability for us to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. But the people that came seemed to like it, and it felt incredible singing it with the band for folks. I'm a road boy. I like the road a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like to go. I like to see things. And it was such a pleasure to see that much of America in that month period, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Were you guys like, were you affected at all? Like, were you on the tour when they shut down everything, or?
Oh yeah. I mean, like, okay. So like everybody started getting worried about January, right? Mm-hmm. I went and did the Outlaw Country Cruise at the end of January and the first of February. And then our tour started like a week later. And so it seemed like everywhere we went, the next day the news would be, well, you know, if we were in, you know, Newport, Connecticut, and then the next day we were in like New Jersey, you know, we would get up and turn the news on, and they were like, oh, massive outbreak in Newport, Connecticut yesterday. I mean, it was like,
oh,
right behind us everywhere we went. And we were in New York the final week, you know, right before everything shut down. So, and it was starting to get kind of scary, you know, and like, because again, nobody really understood what was happening, but it was so strange to be in Manhattan and like, or to ride the train back to Secaucus, Jersey, where we were all staying, and be one of five people on the train.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was very strange. It was very strange. And we made it back, and you know, everybody's been on lockdown since then, and I guess this is our new normal. I hate to think that, but
I know.
You know. I have faith though, because in every instance in life where things have gotten rocky or things have kind of shifted social ways, you know, music has always been the one little bit of glue that kind of makes things better, you know. It's been going on since the dawn of time, and I believe that it's going to be the one thing that rings, that shines through, that and booze.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, like
that's what's always funny is like we live in California, so it's like the places that are never going to go out of business are like
the weed
dispensaries and the liquor stores. So it's like, you know, where there's a will, there's a way.
I think that's essential.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. how funny. Well, I did see that you've done some acting. You're in Walk the Line. That's pretty incredible.
Yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about that experience.
That was a great time. I portrayed Jerry Lee Lewis in it. Man, what a great piece of country music history to be a part of. I'm honored by it, and it was a ball. Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon and Robert Patrick, Jennifer Goodwin and Shelby Lynn, and it was Shooter Jennings. We were all it was a great time.
Mm-hmm. And had you done acting prior to that?
No, I had done a brief stint for Donna Karan. I'd done a small movie for her as myself, but that was my foray into acting. And it led to a nice second career, if you will.
Right. Have you done any other acting after that?
I've got about 15 or 16 films and TV series to my credit. So
yeah, wow.
It's been something cool. You have to look for them. Some of them are real bad.
Do you enjoy it though?
I love acting. It's one of my favorite things to do. I enjoy the challenge of being on set. I enjoy watching other actors that are masters of their craft. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the production value of it. I love the way that films work. It's one of the best places to get relaxation, if that makes any sense, because you're able to go do your work. And even though your work lasts 15 hours, maybe some days, you know what I mean? It's still, once you do your work, you're shuttled back and you're taken care of and fed very well. And you're, it's one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Was that kind of intimidating? I mean, being new to that world of acting and then
it was being on a set
with these superstars.
I mean, it made me catch my breath a couple of times. It was 20th Century Fox, you know, and mm-hmm. $30 million film. So like, yeah, it was a big deal. And I'd wanted it all my life. Every kid dreams of that. I think somewhere in their heart, they want to try to be a movie star. And that opportunity came, and you know, I bit my tongue and I watched Joaquin, and whatever he did, I followed. And I watched Reese, and I listened to Mr. Mangold, and I enjoyed every moment of it.
That's cool. What a movie to be in too.
I mean, exactly. Wow. It's a piece of history, which is 20th Century Fox doesn't even exist anymore. So it's kind of neat to be a part of that.
Yeah, I mean, and the storyline and everything just kind of ties into how you grew up.
It's a piece of Hollywood magic. So
yeah, very cool. Well, tonight the new record comes out. What are you most excited for people to hear on the album? Or
I'm just excited for them to have the opportunity to hear the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The response has been simply incredible from the past 3 months that it's been coming out. I've been reading all your letters and your fans. Comments and things like that, and it's beautiful, and thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of it. Please let me know, continue to let me know what you think. You can reach me at Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. Just send me a message.
Love that. Well, yeah. With your Instagram, are you doing, have you premiered any of the songs? Like, are you going on there and playing them, like live streaming? Or
we've premiered 9 of the songs so far over the past 3 months, and there's a video with each song that we did in a television studio, a real high quality, just me and a guitar, and so yeah, it's been a sweet rollout. Every week there's been something more, so it's kind of nice.
That's
we're
cool.
Planning a live concert that'll be shown over the web here in the next week or so. That'll be
cool.
Away from our people at Luck.
So, nice, like a full show with you guys or with you playing?
Yeah, full show. Full show album.
Wow. So
keep a lookout for it.
That's exciting. Very, very cool. Thank you, Waylon, so much for talking with me today.
Thank
I really
you for talking to me. I really appreciate it as well. And I will see you real soon.
I have one more question for you before you
go ahead, let you go,
if that's cool.
Absolutely.
I just want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Man, sing your song and sing it truthfully. Find what you want to sing about and sing about it. Don't be an asshole, and motivate yourself by moving out of love. And that'll take you lots of places. Oh, and always, always live in the now. Can't do anything about tomorrow. Can't do anything about yesterday. Can't do something about right now. Keep right now.